down to the guy below you. We put it into an empty bucket, another giant empty bucket, maybe like a 55-gallon drum or something. And we lowered it down. We used to call it the siphon effect, similar to what you would do, you know, if you were taking water out of a pool and you had a hose, and then you wanted to, you know, drain the pool without a pump, you know. And it's the same effect with the chain. When you put that down, even a couple of feet below that bucket that's on the upper floor, once that starts going, that's it. I mean, that whole thing is coming out, you know, come hell or high water. And then, you know, you would actually be able to lower it to, you know, a floor or two below you, whatever you wanted to do. And it would, like, happen instantly. Then, you know, instead of moving this, you know, 200, 300 pounds, chain from, you know, it would be done, you know, in a matter of seconds. Amazing. Anyway, that's why I sent back to Wes, and that's what he's talking about. Back to you, Roy. WS2N.
Okay, Paul, was that a Veritasium video?
I have no idea. Wes would know. I watched the guy, whoever he was, and very well done. But back to you, Roy.
Okay, very good. It sounded like a Veritasium video that I saw a year or two ago. Wesley, do you know if it's a Veritasium video? I'm curious.
No, it wasn't Veritasium. We used it with a British man who demonstrated that siphon-like effect. It is really eye-catching. You have it today in your email, because the same time when I responded, I mean, I sent it to you like a month ago. You were probably too busy. I understand that. Paul, when he responded to it to me, I sent it, the answer to Paul, and I sent it the same answer to you as well. And there are two videos there. One is of that guy with the fontaine chain. It's absolutely eye-catching. Roy, you're going to love it. It's like a typical person, it's like the chain is formed like a fontaine or like a siphon or siphon going up with no reason to be this way, and then going down, and then you can think what kind of force is making that chain actually going up and keeping that shape. That's why he said in that video that Chinese caught it, some of the other guys caught it, and they caught that video, and they were trying to replicate the same, and Chinese were abusing that effect till he actually took it down, and then he got called from space. So the scientist that was in space called him, asking him for video conversation, where both of them were testing that effect. So you're going to love it. And then I sent another video that was also interesting, very interesting video. So the other video was, let me drop. Okay, so the second video was that you have a fluid in the flask, or fluid in the tubing, glass tubing, and you have a different thickness of the tubing, and some of the tubing looks like like a funnel, and then it is presented against the weight like a seesaw, right? And then all of a sudden you see that to compensate twice as much of fluid on the left-hand side, you need much less fluid on the other side, and then there was explanation why. So I think that would be good for the next TechNet if you decide that you want to make a puzzle. It's not a statement, but it was like, I said that probably none of the ham radio amateurs, including the PhD in chemistry, know about it. Of course, it was a kind of joke, but at the same time, it might be truth. Back to you, Dr. Ray.
KC2GS, yes, hydrostatic pressure. I saw the video. That was the first one that I clicked, and I saw it, and then I was distracted by something else. Someone in the chat room was kind enough to remind me. It's a Steve Mould video, which I kind of index in the same category as Veritasium. So I think I saw it, because I remember the bits and pieces that you're describing. It certainly is a interesting law of physics. So maybe a physicist or something close to a physicist would know. Chemists really aren't taught that much about hydrostatic pressures.
AF2P with a comment.
Certainly.
Yeah, for the chain video, you can just dump into Google chain fountain and you'll find it. Or you'll find one. I don't know how many there are. AF2P, back to net.
Okay, thanks. I'm sure there's loads of them out there. It's a very a pretty video.
It's dropping down. What I suggest is that video talking about the fluids, you don't mind to look at it next week, just to try to say, it's a good puzzle, I believe. I mean, it's not a puzzle to you and to me, but it's a puzzle to the audience, because it's simple enough, and I believe the effect is widely unknown. Or intuitively not easy to be known. Back to you, Dr. Ryan.
Yeah, but the problem is that it's a very visual puzzle. I mean, if you have nothing better to do, play the YouTube again, but close your eyes. And tell me if it makes that much sense to you that way. It's really good when you can visualize what he's talking about. And it's diagrammed even to kind of add emphasis. But you take all that away on a radio, and I think a lot of people are left confused.
Well, I think that there are quite good, smart people in the ham radio community, including our PhD in chemistry, they could comment on it. But it has so many applications. So if you have a differentiation in the tubing thickness, then you might be actually quite shockingly surprised that you need 2, 3, maybe 5 times of the fluid on one side to compensate the fluid on the other side of the seesaw or the weight or the balance, whatever. But I think that is a good for the puzzle. Back to you.
Okay. I mean, as long as you mention puzzle, I have something that doesn't really qualify as a puzzle, but it's just an interesting little thing. So let me give it a try. I'll mention three people's names, and you tell me if any of them and which of them are amateur radio operators or were amateur radio operators, okay? The first name is Wally Cox. The next is Priscilla Presley. And the third is Brando.
Fernando.
You guess Marlon Brando?
Yes.
Do you think any other of them are hams?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay. Anyone else want to hazard a guess?
WS2N.
Yes, Paul?
Yeah, I know. He wound up in Tahiti. But Priscilla Presley.
Right you are. Two out of the three were hams. Wally Cox, as far as I know, wasn't. But and I wouldn't imagine Priscilla Presley. I usually remember the old-time names. People will always use Walter Cronkite. They use Joe Walsh. They use Goldwater. But I never heard anyone mention Priscilla Presley being a ham. It just doesn't strike me as a typical ham, personally. Well, that's my trivial question for tonight. I unfortunately, TechNet puzzles are really difficult because I try to find them where the answer is not out there in Google and it doesn't require any kind of pictures, you know, illustrations or videos or anything. So they're very, very difficult to find. What fits in my mind's eye as the optimum, the best TechNet puzzle. But I still am searching. Anyway, it's 10:16. I hope everyone had fun. Hope you learned a few things. And I hope you'll join us next week when we try and do this all over again. But at this point in time, I'm going to ask Paul to take over with the SpaceNet report.
Okay, we could do that. WS2N for the SpaceNet report for the TechNet. Very good. And by the way, Roy, it's been like 400 episodes since you started the science talk years ago. My computer, you know, clicks it off every week, so just to let you know. Main topic I wanted to talk about tonight is the New Glenn rocket that took off Thursday. So I don't know if anybody saw this thing on the news, because there's a lot of news, but the rocket in the industry sometimes takes a back seat. I've seen a couple of replays, so I did watch it live on the Blue Origin webcast. This is 200. Hold on one second. Anyway, this rocket is 321 feet tall. It's a very heavy lift rocket. It's competing against SpaceX. SpaceX has got their Starship that they're developing, and Blue Origin has the New Glenn. They're both planned on having reusability. SpaceX, they're trying to reuse the whole vehicle. But they're really not getting anywhere anytime soon. I know they'll eventually get to where they want to go, but, I mean, they've already launched 11 of these monster rockets, and they haven't gone into orbit yet. Where New Glenn was, you know, built by Blue Origin, that's Jeff Bezos, and, you know, he's heavily involved with the company itself now. The you know, I've talked about this rocket many times before on the net. Anyway, it's got seven DE-4 engines. Each engine is 550,000 pounds of thrust. So collectively, it's almost 4 million pounds of thrust when it takes off. And the idea is to reuse that first stage. Very important to do that because that brings the cost down. Back in January, they launched New Glenn One, first one. Their goal was to make it to orbit, and they did on the first try. Most rockets fail. Something happens, blows up, separation doesn't work. The second stage sometimes goes haywire, doesn't go to the proper orbit. Theirs went 100% on the first try in January. The only thing that they did not succeed in doing was bringing the booster down and landing it on the big ship out 400 miles out in the middle of the ocean. I'm trying to succeed this time in landing that booster. And sure enough, they did. The main mission was to put two spacecraft into orbit around Mars. So that was the payload. So this, like I said, 321-foot rocket got off the pad, rose slowly off the pad, and you could see the seven engines burning perfectly. Where, you know, SpaceX, I used to see their, you know, the engines just flame out, one here or one there, sometimes relight. This 100%. And then they got to separation. That worked perfectly as well. The second stage continued on to orbit to eventually send those to Escapade. That was the name of the satellites, Escapade satellites, in the direction where it will eventually fly on to Mars. The first stage, you know, they have little nitrogen jets. It twisted around and pointed itself with the engine straight down as it was coming down through the atmosphere. The plan was to light off three of the seven engines to slow it down as it's coming through the atmosphere, which worked, again, perfectly. The three engines eventually would shut off, and this thing came down. Beautiful pictures coming through the clouds and everything. And toward the very end, you know, you can see the recovery ship down below. They have cameras on board. And the center stage, the center rocket of that first stage lit. And that's the landing burn. And, I saw replays, taken from a distance. And it was coming down near the ship. It looked like it was off by about a couple hundred feet. And it more or less hovered and then shifted over, right over to the center of that ship, came down, dead center. You know, they had a big ring on the ship. Now, you remember, the ship is 370-some-odd feet around, maybe a little longer. So it's longer than a football field. And it's about as wide as a football field. It's around 150 feet wide. Football field is around 160 feet wide. But it's as big as a football field, you know, including the the gold. So this thing came down and landed perfectly. Now you got to understand this second stage, the whole thing was 321 feet. The first stage that landed was 19-story building. You know, roughly 190 feet. SpaceX has been landing their Falcon 9, you know, hundreds of them. But this thing's around four times bigger than that. Much wider, too. Falcon is 12 feet in diameter. This thing's 23 feet in diameter. Six landing legs open up, and the thing comes down, landed perfect. I mean, I was really amazed. What happens after that is they have a little robot thing come riding out from the, like a little garage door opens up, and this thing comes riding out. And the reason for this is it plugs into the base of the rocket and shoots nitrogen in to get rid of all the fumes. Uses pneumatics, you know, for some of the other things that they need. Power, communications between the rocket itself and mission control. Then they have these six other, like, robotic things that are coming out, and they're controlled by actually six individual drivers that, you know, people that are riding these things, and each one brings itself over to each leg. There's six legs, and they use that. Each unit is very heavy. I forget how many tons, but anyway, when they grab a hold of the legs, apparently that's enough to secure it where it's not going to move on its trip all the way back to the Cape. So with that, it takes around 4 days to tow the whole barge all the way back. They have this towing vehicle which serves many purposes. First of all, the towing vehicle, when the rocket is coming down, is around 5 miles away from where the rocket is coming down. So naturally, they get great pictures. And eventually, after the little robotic that did all the pneumatics and the power and all of that is complete, and the six other robotic contraptions, they grab a hold of the legs, when that's all complete, at that point, then a crew from this ship, this towing ship, goes on board, and they're able to, you know, stay with the rocket or not. Doesn't matter. It's pretty much automatic. And then the barge is towed all the way back to Cape Canaveral. The goal is to refurbish it once they get it there and make sure everything's okay. And eventually it will put back on Launch Complex 36, by the way. Jeff Bezos had rebuilt Launch Complex 36. They put over $1 billion into the rebuilding of that place. And eventually they'll relaunch New Glenn 3, they'll call it. And if you want to see a picture of what I'm talking about, I got a very good picture from Blue Sky. I'm on Blue Sky for social media. I got a great picture from them, and I sent it over to Roy. He put it onto his website, and you'll see what I'm looking at. Beautiful picture taken from the boat that tows this thing around the ocean. And, you know, not don't want to forget about the payload. The payload is two spacecraft, the Escapade. And their goal is to eventually go into orbit around Mars, They gave them names. One is called blue, the other one is called gold. Apparently the colors are from wherever the, it's at Berkeley or something. Anyway, they use the two names, blue and gold, and they were put on that payload. When it was going uphill, once it's in space, the fairings open up, separate, and expose the payload. By the way, it was being pushed by two BE-3U engines. Now, I mentioned the big engines on the first stage are BE-4. They're liquid methane. Well, actually, they're LNG, very close to methane. LNG is liquid natural gas, and that's the fuel, and then liquid oxygen. It's used, you know, pure methane. They can skip that purifying process. They're able to use liquid natural gas. And they claim that the burning of the fuel will completely burn up any extra impurities that LNG has compared to the methane. So that's the first stage. But the second stage, pushing the payloads to orbit, the BE-3U engines, liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen. I know I've talked about these before, but they're the exact same engines that they use on their New Shepard. New Shepard rocket is the one that launches from Western Texas, and they'll send either science experiments up to suborbital space, or they send a crew up. And what they do is they usually send a crew of six up, and over the years since they've been doing that, I think it's somewhere around 70, I think they're up to 70 people total that they've put into suborbital flight. But that rocket that's going up only has one engine, and it's one BE-3 engine that pushes out around 120,000 pounds of thrust, and that's what gets them off the ground. They go into suborbital space, weightless for 4 or 5 minutes, and then they return in their capsule. But that BE-3 engine lands vertically with the booster from New Shepard. So that engine is now a proven engine. They've flown this thing about 40 different times so far successfully. So now they take two of them, and they're using them for the second stage, and each one is pushing actually a little bit more thrust on the BE-3U engine, around 150,000 pounds each, and that works very well. Now, where do the two spacecraft go? Normally, they would just push them right all the way to Mars. They would do a Mars injection. But this time that's going to be skipped. They're going to send it out to the L2 location. L2 is Lagrange point 2. Anybody's doing this. They're sending it out to the L2 to sit there for around 11 months, 11, 12 months. And they're just going to sit there waiting. And the reason they're waiting is they're waiting for Mars and Earth to get close to one another. Once that happens, each spacecraft, they have their own engine. Blue and gold will ignite, and they will fly independently all the way to Mars. And normally what they would have done is they would have waited another year before this launch took effect. But they want to do two things. First of all, they want to, you know, get this up and going. But the other reason is to prove the capability of doing this by letting this sit out in the L2 location. You could have a scenario where you could launch spacecraft to Mars or other planets, and you could just leave them at the L2 location and let them hang out there. They use very few little fuel at the Lagrange point too, until the window is open, and then they just reignite their engines and off they go. You could put a dozen rockets out there if you want to send them to Mars and let them hang out there instead of trying to launch off the launch pad, maybe only get one or two launches, maybe three launches every 27 months, when their planets are online. This way you could put, as many spacecraft out at L2 that you want. And when the time is right, they could all reignite and head out to the planet at the same time. These spacecraft, the Escapade spacecraft, have all kinds of sensors on it. The idea is to go into orbit around Mars and be able to detect the atmosphere, what goes on with the atmosphere of Mars when the solar wind hits it. So they have all kinds of fancy detectors on this, including a couple of cameras on each one, so we will eventually get pictures. Any comments? This is WS2N. I know I'm long-winded, but it was pretty exciting watching this particular launch. WS2N.
WB2BXO, how are you, Paul?
Frank, I got on my rig here. Something like that. Start to heat up. How you doing, Frank?
Okay, yeah, it doesn't sound like you're chopping in and out of the passband. A lot of crackling on your signal. Anyway, yeah, I was trying to. That's one of the things I was trying to understand is what was the and I might have missed a little of your talk there because I stepped out a bit. What the advantage was of flying out to L2 and hanging out there for 11 months rather than waiting? Is it purely the in terms of the technology purely? The technical demo of showing that you could let an aircraft, a spacecraft, sit out at L2 for almost a year and then fire it up and send it, slingshot it around Earth and sending it out to Mars? Or are there other technical advantages to having it hang out there rather than just keeping it on the ground to wait for the launch window? I understand the budgetary thing. Hey, let's get it out into space while we have the launch vehicle and the budget to do it. I take it that was probably part of the consideration also. Another question I had is, how does the size of the new Glenn vehicle compare to Starship and the Saturn V? Go ahead.
Yeah, if you put the Saturn V and new Glenn next to each other, and you took the launch escape system, which is probably 50 or more feet off of the Saturn V, they would look like they're about the same size. They're very close. The diameter of Saturn V was much bigger, 20, 27 feet, something like that. Where this one is 23 feet. But yeah, height-wise, they're about the same. The idea is, a number of reasons. I gotta understand, Escapade spacecraft was initially supposed to be launched by the New Glenn rocket, the first New Glenn rocket, back in October. That was when the window was open, and they would have made a direct flight. They would have done a trans-Mars injection, I guess they would call it. When you go to the moon, it's TLI, translunar injection. Well, they would have done trans-Mars injection, right after launch, and then it would have taken, 9 or 10 months to get to Mars. They missed that window because, Blue Origin wasn't ready for New Glenn. New Glenn didn't get off the ground until January. By that time, it was too late. And they decided to, they wanted to test another gizmo that Blue Origin is going to use, some kind of a transport contraption. They wanted to test that anyway in the first launch, which it worked out, 100%. Escapade satellites. Launch on this flight. Like you said, just get it off the ground. New Glenn wanted to also be able to test out landing their booster, which of course, like I said, worked out good. So getting it off the ground and out of the way, that's one reason. Also, they want to be able to prove that they could do that. Say you have 3, 4, 5 different flights, maybe 6 or 10 flights that eventually are going to be going to Mars. Say Mars is colonized, and you have dozens of flights that have to go out every 27 months when the window opens. Well, what you could do is you could, during the year or a couple of, whenever you have an opportunity to launch, you would launch and put your spacecraft out at the L2 and have, theoretically dozens of spacecraft just hanging out there waiting for the window to open. And when it does, it could all head off to Mars. Now, you're eliminating, all these different launches from Earth. We have a couple of launch pads, that you can use, maybe space.
I think you may go out, Paul, WB2BX.
Out. Okay. 1.5 hour ago.
You were talking, I think we lost you at the point of saying that all those spacecraft could hang out there and then head off to Mars, and that does sound, I could see some real uses for that. What I was really wondering is not so much the physical comparison, but the comparison in terms of power between, say, Falcon 9, New Glenn, and Saturn V and Starship. My understanding is that New Glenn was pretty close to the super heavy class, like Starship, but not quite as large. Go ahead.
Yeah, New Glenn was almost 4 million pounds. I think they said 3.85 million pounds of thrust, close to 4 million. Compare that to Saturn V, 7.5 million pounds of thrust. Compare that to Starship. I think they're going off at. I think they're up to like 15 million pounds of thrust, you know, twice the amount of the Saturn V. And all the shuttles just go off at 5.5 million pounds of thrust. Now, that doesn't really mean that much. It also, what's important is the size of the tanks, too. You could take, like, a Falcon 9 Heavy. That's three of them bolted together, as you know, Frank. And that's 5.2 million pounds of thrust, I guess. I think that's the number. So that's more than this one. But look at the size, if you look at the size, the diameters of these things, the amount of fuel that New Glenn carries compared to the three of those things is about the same. So, you know, you're getting, it's only one rocket doing what those three are doing. And even so, those three are going off with a higher thrust, you know, over 5 million. And you get close to 4 million on New Glenn. New Glenn could put an equal amount of payload up to orbit. So that's what I'm doing this off the top of my head. Back to you, Frank.
All right. So I think what you're saying is that New Glenn is somewhat comparable to. Falcon Heavy, not really anywhere near what Starship can do. And maybe you're going to get to it, but as I understand it, they've kind of stepped back on Starship and said, wait a minute, the current design is not going to work for orbital missions and lunar and planetary missions, and they're redesigning a version 3. Is that your understanding also? Go ahead.
Yeah, I agree. Big bearings that separate. For instance, in next year of New Glenn, I mean, this big lander, they call it what, Mach 1, down to the lunar surface. Be their cargo version, so they'll make a couple of these things, and they're going to probably do this early next year. You won't be able to launch that for a ship. Airings that open up, so you know they're limiting. Maybe with the new version that they're building, maybe they're going to try to do something like that. I don't know. I haven't heard anything like that. You know, their whole deal is they want reusability. So they want this whole up two-stage Starship and then have the second stage come back, you know, without ever, you know, opening up to let a massive vehicle. And you got to understand this cargo vehicle thing is around 30 feet high. And about, it's not that wide, around 10, 11 feet wide. But eventually, they'll be sending the Mark II up there. Mark II is like a five-story building, you know. It's like, I think, 52 feet high. And that will all be incorporated in the fairing of the New Glenn. So New Glenn will be able to, you know, And by the way, they, when I say Mark 1 and Mark 2, they're being built right now by New Glenn. So they'll be able to launch their own lunar lander with the New Glenn Starship. From what I see, yeah, they could send the whole Starship, maybe the top part, or the, you know, the Starship itself, the second stage, you know, all the way to the moon and eventually land it. But to do that, they need to refuel before they could do that. New Glenn is different. Yeah, they're going to have to refuel as well. Once they get to, you know, lunar orbit, they're going to refuel out there. And they're going to do that with a transport refueling vehicle that Blue Origin is also building. You know, that, you know, I'm talking about the crew. When they send a crew out there, the crew would go out on Orion, SLS system. By the way, the SLS is 8.5 million pounds of thrust. I should have mentioned that before. Wow, let me drop it. That's all. The moon. New Glenn sent this lander out using New Glenn to orbit the moon and eventually dock with Orion. That, to refuel that vehicle, the Mark II vehicle, you're going to need a transport vehicle that's in Earth orbit, and then that will send liquid oxygen, I guess, to moon orbit. So they, I mean, there's a lot of things that have to happen before that. And that mission, the first landing mission for New Glenn, is they call it Artemis 5. So SpaceX is supposed to be able to do Artemis 3, then a lunar lander, Artemis 4, and then after that, New Glenn. Back to you, Frank. WS2N.
Yeah, very good. As I understand it, I mean, on-orbit refueling is an unproven technology. So, I mean, I don't know how they're going to get that working in the next year or two to make this whole thing viable. It just doesn't sound very feasible to me. You know, so I'm sure I'm not the only one who's very skeptical that this whole thing is going to work. You know, unless somebody comes up with something workable, maybe something more similar to Apollo Saturn, they're not going to beat the Chinese back to the moon. Whether anybody really cares about that or not, I don't know. Okay.
I care, and I'm skeptical too. I'm skeptical cheerleaders for this group, you know. But you know, once in a while I read these things. Blue Origin has this refrigeration cooling system that they're developing. They're gonna get the power from the solar panels, and they're gonna be able to keep the liquid nitrogen, LNG, correction, liquid hydrogen. They're landers, by the way. The landers are going, like the one I just talked about, that is going to launch early next year. The Mark 1, the fuel that they're using is liquid hydrogen, not liquid methane. Starship wants to do that with liquid methane. But both these vehicles, the cargo version and the crew version that Blue Origin is building are both going to be liquid hydrogen. So they got to figure out how to replenish liquid hydrogen, retool that, if they, you know, at some point, either in Earth orbit or lunar orbit. And the idea is to keep that coal. I think it's 100 and, read it recently, minus 167, I think it's the warmest it could get, you know, in certain temperatures. Anyway, you know, I think it's been a minus 400 numbers is really where they got to keep it. Could you imagine? So, yeah, that's why I'm very skeptical, but, you know, they say they're working on this. You know, time will tell. I want to see this refrigeration unit. That's what I want to see. So, yeah, we'll keep an eye on what's going on. There's three possibilities: Starship, New Glenn, also Lockheed has a lander that they're working on, that they're hoping to eventually get a contract for landing people on the moon as well. But to beat the Chinese, well, the Chinese got their own problems. I was going to bring this up. Drop it. You know, their missions are called Shenzhou, Shenzhou 20 and 21. Shenzhou is the name of the spacecraft that docks with the Chinese space station. So the amount of people that they keep on station is three. You know, they'll do up to three to 6 months with just three people. And then they get replacements. You know, a new crew comes up with new Shenzhou spacecraft. They dock. The old crew goes back down, and the new crew stays up there. So the rotation continues. So this time they did the same thing. Shenzhou was, number 20 was docked with. You know, they're all happy and everything. It's time for them to come back. Shenzhou 21 gets launched with a new crew. And they dock with the space station. And they say to the old crew, well, we'll hang out here a week or so with you, which they did. And now it's time for you to go back. And they looked at the spacecraft. And apparently they saw a crack in the window. Now they made the determination the space station, or in this case, the spacecraft itself, was hit with some kind of space junk. And they deemed it not safe to fly down to Earth. So what are they doing? Okay, I guess we're going to eventually get another spacecraft to, you know, send up. You know, maybe a spacecraft that's not manned, and so they could bring people down. Instead of waiting for that, though, there's only so many consumables that they have on board, and they decided, well, we'll bring the crew that was supposed to come back down. We'll bring them down. They went down on the new spacecraft that just came up. They left their old one up there for the new crew that's there. I would have said, hey, what are you doing here? You're taking my spacecraft. Now I'm stuck here. Those things are supposed to be lifeboats. We have that on the International Space Station. There's a rule. How many people are on the space station all have to have a seat. There's a fire or a problem.
That
everybody needs a ride home. And that's the flight rule. I guess China doesn't have that flight rule. These three are up there. If there's a fire or something, you know, I guess, you know, what are they going to do? Jump into the spacecraft and hope the window don't break. Anyway, now they're up there. They're going to wait for China to hastily, and they probably will, put together a rescue vehicle of some sort. I'm not even sure if their vehicle is designed to go up without a crew. When we did that recently with Sonny Williams and Wilmore, Bruce Wilmore, they were stuck up there for, 8 months? Because the Boeing Starliner wasn't working. Probably the reaction control units weren't working the way they should. So that's the reason they were stuck there. But, we had the capability of sending a Falcon 9 up without a crew, and they did. And that docked autonomously, and that's how we got back. That one didn't go up. That went up with a crew of two. And when they came back, they went back with a crew of four. But, we had a plan B, and they went by that. When I see China doesn't have a plan B, back to you, Frank, WSON.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if they don't have the same safety flight rules as we do. I guess somebody will, the Chinese can't do it, Russians will send a Soyuz up. I don't know whether the Chinese are using a compatible docking collar or not. But the Russians may have or can get the correct docking collar to do it. Anyway, it'll be interesting to see how they resolve this, because I don't know, anyway, there are any number of problems there. It's going to be incredibly interesting to see what happens. And on orbit refueling is a totally unproven technology. All of this is going to be very interesting in the next couple of years. And I think we're just about out of time here, so I'll pass it back to you to tie the ribbons on it, as they say sometimes on HF. WB2BX.
Okay. Not think of that. That's a good point, Frank. That's true. When the Chinese built this, they said that they pretty much duplicated what the Russians do. Like, both of them have an ascent and descent module, and that's where the crew is. They're sandwiched in between two other modules in front. You have the service module behind them, with fuel, water, oxygen stuff, and then in front of them they have the orbital module. So this way, when they get to orbit after launch, they can open up that door and they can hang out in a little bit more room in the orbital module. But when they return, those two separate. Nowadays, they separate at the same time. The service module and the orbital module just, blow away. And that's left with the descent module with the crew, and then they come back down. So, both were designed the same way. In my guess, the docking mechanism, they copied that system. Maybe they copied that as well. They might be compatible. Good point. Anyway, it's after 11 o'clock. So, we'll sign off for now. Hopefully we'll all make it back for next week. Before I turn it over to Roy, I always mention that Weimark always has the club info net tomorrow night, 8:30, not 8 o'clock like this net. 8:30 on these repeaters. and that's always followed by George with Swap and Shop, and that's always followed by Radio Newsline. So with that,